Blog Talk Radio.
And I can make a firm pledge under my plan, no family making less than $250,000.
Let me say it as simply as I can.
Any form of
transparency and the rule of law will be the touchstone of this president.
That, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Even presidents need reminding that our rights come from nature and God and not from government. The right that makes all the difference now is the right to choose our own leaders. And you are entitled to the clearest possible choice, because the time for choosing is drawing near.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is proud to present your favorite hillbilly, Mr. Kevin Harned.
And good evening tonight. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Kevin Harned, and this is Hillbilly Logic. And it's also got our other favorite hillbilly, Dean Whiteman.
Hey,
Dino.
How's it going, Kev?
Great. In studio with us tonight. Thanks for coming in and joining us.
Thanks for having me.
The one that we're missing, and I didn't know that you were going to be able to join me this evening, is Richard Blowers, or plus Greg.
Right.
We're going to have to get a round table in here one night of all the hillbillies.
Absolutely. We'll need a bigger studio.
And I don't think that it would be a good idea to build a bonfire in here. So
no.
No.
I'm gonna go along with that.
So never ever a good idea. All kinds of stuff going on, Dino. I know that you're usually one that loves to enjoy the banter and likes to lighten the load.
Yeah.
But you've been kind of agitated today.
Oh, not just today, the past few days, but it's after talking with you.
Blame me.
Well, no, you said exactly what was going to happen. Everybody's harping on the gun things. It's Kev said to me, literally, probably 10 days ago, you know what's going to happen? And I said, what? And he said, I should say, that what they're going to do is try to pass laws to make us have grandfathered. If you have a gun already, it's okay. You can keep your gun, but you need to have it registered. And I said, yeah, I can see them doing something like that, but I'd be surprised. It will take a long time. This is America. You know, I'm always one to say that. And sure enough, here they are. And the other thing you said we talked about is a mandatory gun buyback after that. If we register them, and, you know, your brother and I went and got our conceal and carries and talked about it when I got it. Well, now they know we're on the books.
Well, yeah, and it's not a good thing. It's a good thing to go get a concealed carry, and, you know, run by Sovereign Arms. It's a wonderful place to get it.
It sure is. That's where I got mine. I feel much safer now.
Just,
I used to be scared of guns, but I'm not anymore.
Right at 21 and 141.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just south of St. Louis, Missouri. Matt Gummersall will do you upright.
And get it while you can. But then, as my point, it's flustering, is after a mandatory gun buyback, and if you don't bring your gun in, you'll be an instant felon, it seems to me.
Unfortunately, this is how they've done it before, and it's an approach. You really didn't need to be a psychic.
No,
I would
didn't.
Like to say that I pulled a rabbit out of the hat. I would rather say I was wrong.
No, and I heard the same story 20 years ago from a gentleman named Farouk. I shouldn't say his last name. Well, I don't know. Why not? I'll have him on the show sometime. Reznovich. He's from
Bosnia. That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, he's the first Bosnian I met, actually. And said, you know, your family's coming and all these other guys are coming. We're all working together. I was a non-union painter. And they came over and they had money from our government that gave them new cars and they were buying places. And I'm like, well, what's the deal? Why are you guys here? And same sort of thing. They took our guns. You know what? We shouldn't have guns. People are getting killed with guns. Let's take all the guns. You know who didn't give up their guns?
The criminals.
And just like the politicians and other people. And the next thing you have is yourself going to another country. You've heard the stories of rape rooms. That wasn't just in Iraq. In Iran, they had the same thing. What was his name? Milosevic.
Milosevic.
Yes, every country's got one, and we better watch out. And I heard Ted Nugent the other day, and I liked him. Did you hear him with his piece about you can suck on my machine gun?
I did not.
Oh, that's what he said. He was on, and he can take.
Was this a
back.
New song?
No, it's they. If they come looking for my guns, and they're going to take my guns from me, well, it's going to be a fight. I told my wife that I pity the. They're going to send out, as Mr. T would say, I pity the fool that's going to get minimum wage to go out and get the people's guns.
Well, unfortunately,
it won't be him, will it?
Unfortunately, I mean, you know, of course, we're not advocating violence.
No, we're not.
Always got to put that disclaimer out there.
I just came
back
from Las Vegas. I told you about the TSA. We talked about that before I even went.
Yeah,
and they were all over the place.
There was an incident in the hotel where you were staying.
Right across, yes. I've never been to Las Vegas before. People used to get killed, I guess the drunk. And there's plenty of drunken people. They make you drunk.
it's one of the goals of
take your money. It's much easier. But you walk across, up across, and hotels are hooked together by these catwalks that go across, you know, the top of the...
You want to make sure you can't get away.
Exactly. Well, the one touching us, and it was a nicer hotel. I wanted to go to it that evening. I said to the wife, and luckily she wanted to...
Was it the Excalibur?
That's the one. The guy walked in, and we're very lucky. We're blessed. No one's blessed in this situation. He walked in and killed his girlfriend and then killed himself. But it was in a highly... populated. It was right in the front area where all the gambling and all the registration, and you know, he could have unloaded in there. He had a specific goal in mind.
You know, that's one of the things that is so perplexing, on top of just the loss of life and young life in Sandy Hook.
Yes.
With the elementary. It's a horrible tragic event.
It is.
Now, unfortunately, you know, we've got the vultures out there that are going to try to grab a hold of this to push through their gun agenda.
Yes.
And unfortunately, too, I would like to see those that make that argument present a case of evidence for all of the gun-free zones and all of the cities with the strictest gun laws being safe havens.
Well, I think everyone realizes that. That's what's fallen short. The bad guy had the gun. And there will always be bad guys with guns. These were places where there were strict laws imposed about having no guns where they come in and do this. Most of the places where we've had violence.
Almost all of them are gun-free zones.
Well, I can't get anything. I just heard today, Kevin, the mainstream media, the last thing I got, and from all of my politicians who I voted for in Washington and people I didn't vote for in Washington, have told me this is why we're going after these multi-clips, and the kids were shot up so bad, the guy was walking around with some kind of a multi-clip, you know, Uzi-type machine gun, and that's not what he had at all.
No.
No, he just had the handguns, and he had a hunting rifle strapped to his back, correct?
Well, you know, again,
I've
this is...
20 stories.
That's the problem, and that is one of the major problems.
What's
with
the
this,
truth on
is
it?
The fact that we absolutely, positively cannot ascertain the truth. not by, we cannot.
It's true.
I mean,
with the
reports that we've heard, with all of the contradictory evidence that our claims that have come forth, you cannot believe anything that they're saying right now.
I agree.
I mean, I
wholeheartedly agree.
You've known me for a long time. I like to try to be kind of logical. I try not to get too deep into conspiracy theories unless they make sense.
Yeah.
And here is a case to where, you know, quite frankly, none of it adds up. I've seen an aggressive, slobbering media try to get the story first, but this goes beyond that.
Yes, it does.
It doesn't make any sense at all. And this was one of the early reports that you guys might remember.
I do want to bring in Pierre Thomas. We have breaking developments involving not only the name of the gunman, but we know a little more about where he's from and some other discoveries. Pierre, let's bring our viewers up to date.
David, we're being told by multiple sources that the shooter has been identified as a man by the name of Ryan Lanza, 24 years old, and we're told that his mother, who was a teacher at the school, is among those deceased. Again, Ryan Lanza, 24 years old, identified as the shooter, and again, the relationship at the school is apparently his mother, and she was among those killed.
That was the suspicion since first thing this morning, Pierre. As you know, the two of us have covered so many of these, and you just hate to have to confirm it, but so often this is the case, that the gunman or the suspect in these cases has some sort of personal connection, some sort of relationship with someone inside the school, and there you heard Pierre Thomas, our senior justice correspondent, reporting that it's Ryan Lanza is the name. He's from New Jersey, and he's 24 years old. It's believed his mother was a teacher in the school, Pierre reporting there a moment ago. It's believed she did not survive, along with at least 26 others. The total is at least 27 dead and counting, many of them children. And as we, in the coming hours, learn about the families who will have just the horrific journey ahead after learning that perhaps their child did not survive, we know that the governor is on the scene. He's been meeting with parents. And we know that there was a significant number of children and staff members who did not make it out of that school. Brad Garrett has been with us all morning long. He is a former FBI profiler. And forgive me, Brad, but we always hate it when we have to come to you because it means typically that we're trying to get into the mind of someone who'd be capable of something like this. But this is the kind of piecing together that profilers like you do in a case like this. 24 years old, and his mother was a teacher there. It's what we believe at this hour.
And so what you take away from that is that there is something going on, and probably long-term, between the two of them. And he wanted to, beyond killing her, because obviously someone that would commit this type of act could have killed his mother at any point. He wanted to inflict injury on others beyond his mother, and perhaps what she stood for in reference to the school. David, keep in mind, people who do these things, a lot of it is driven by delusions. That doesn't make them legally crazy, but the delusion is, this has harmed me, this woman has harmed me, she teaches these children, and so I'm going to get rid of her and the world around her. It could be that, it could even tie into possibly something in his own childhood and a relationship with her. But it's my belief, without knowing anything else, this goes beyond just her. It goes on maybe perhaps what she represents, in addition to obviously killing her.
Brad, stick with us here. I want to go back to Pierre. And Pierre, what do we know about this 24-year-old and his home? Some of the other areas where he might have inflicted pain today, other than this school?
Well, again, this is a very fluid situation. We know there's a search ongoing at a residence in New Jersey, thought to be the residence of his parents. We are trying to get some additional reporting about what is happening at the home. We're not quite ready to release that information just yet until we're 100% sure that we know it's accurate. But again, what my sources are telling me is that this 24-year-old Ryan Lanza appears to have gone on a shooting spree at multiple locations, and that we may find additional dead bodies.
Chilling to hear that development. Now, 2:40 in the afternoon, we've been following this since shortly after 9:30 this morning when we got those initial calls. And as you heard Pierre Thomas, our justice correspondent, report there moments ago, and authorities are now investigating a 24-year-old whose name is Ryan Lanza. It's believed he's from New Jersey. And as Pierre said, investigators are now at the home investigating whether or not he might have inflicted pain on other people. Pierre reporting that it is possible that the school was not his only target, and we'll check back in with him as soon as we hear about any possible victims, perhaps inside the home.
All right. Now, just from that one little clip, there are so many inconsistencies. This was some 5 hours after, and I know that that's pretty quick, but at the same time, Ryan, the 24-year-old that it wasn't, it was the 20-year-old younger brother, Adam.
Adam, yeah.
The mother, they go on and on and on about her being a teacher, and there were reports at one point that she may have called in sick that day. Well, then we find out that, many reports say that she wasn't even a teacher. You've heard a report that she was a sub.
She was a sub, yeah. He was just in there once or twice.
One doesn't know what is accurate
What is this guy? Give me delusion. He says he was delusional, but that's not legally crazy. What is legally crazy then?
I have no idea. the man that that shot my brother Glenn's preacher in front of the congregation and his family, he was found crazy and incapable of holding a trial. But you know, he had
Lyme disease.
I've known people with Lyme disease. Yeah, you know, and it can cause serious organ problems and other things. But again, you know, look at what they're throwing on. All I know is the guy marked a day on a calendar, picked the church randomly, planned it in advance.
Oh, wait a minute, I didn't know that.
Yes, and you know how irrational. Granted,
that's rational.
I'll say anybody is crazy that kills others.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, whenever you plan it out in a matter of days.
Once again, on the mainstream media, I saw, and they made it seem like Lyme disease will make you crazy. It'll make you go shooting preachers because this guy had Lyme disease and it wasn't his fault. That's what I get from the mainstream media.
And again, he had never visited that church, you know, and so forth. But
and it was written on his calendar.
In this case, yes. I mean, he had it planned out. In this case, there's so many things that don't make sense. You know what stands out to me in this whole case that absolutely positively tells me something stinks? I mean, other than the whole thing stinks.
Yeah.
That is the fact that the kid took his hard drive out of his computer and destroyed it with a hammer and screwdriver.
Yeah.
It makes no sense. I mean, I don't even care if he's insane. Why? What is the urgency for him to destroy? Not only not leave a note.
He doesn't want anybody to know why or what he was up to. There's some.
Can you give me another example of that happening?
The day I heard that, I thought the kid was absolutely. And I hate to say this, but if he didn't want somebody finding out, because he was probably talking, and I'm scared to say this, with others, and maybe hopefully not like-minded individuals, but he didn't want them to get caught, and he knew how to keep anybody from going after. Because what's the first thing they do? They go to the hard drive and they find everything on there about people. And this kid knew it. He wasn't freaked out and delusional. He had a mindset to do this, and that's what we don't know is why.
Well, again, it's very inconceivable. The only thing that would even sort of explain it is the scenario you just gave.
Yeah.
In the aspect that he's communicating with others and actually plotting, or they're encouraging him
or
to take this action.
Yeah.
One of the things.
That's even worse.
You know, and there's all kinds of underlying scenarios with employment from the father and others that don't make a whole lot of sense, but I'm not going to jump onto those things that I'm not fully informed on yet. There's too many things that don't make sense just from what we know that doesn't make sense.
I haven't heard any of those things, so yeah.
There's all kinds of very strange scenarios.
No, I'm sure there are.
Strange scenarios, but including one of the kids that went to school with him claimed that he was a Satan worshiper. And that he had a website or a web page that was devoted to Satan.
Couldn't they verify that?
Now, many of the things, I just read a report today that some of the sites and other things that he was affiliated with that the police have seized or taken down,
yes,
and they're going to hold indefinitely.
Right.
Along with some of the other stuff. Some of the stuff that doesn't make sense. No surveillance video of him entering or coming around. No pictures. You've got all this security on the school, including the lockdown. Originally, he was supposed to have gotten in because his mother was working there. Mm-hmm. Somebody let him in. Now we know that she wasn't. Somehow he got into a completely locked out building. There's been no mention.
I think that's easy. If the mom was a sub there, or they had the kids, but he was a graduate from there, it's like here comes
no,
a little...
No, there's not even... I don't even know that there's solid proof that the kid was attending there. I'm just...
If that's the case, my thought isn't right. I just have the idea that he came walking up and they knew him. And it's like, hey, there's
Adam. The biggest link that I've heard, or rationale for him going there, is the close proximity to his home. And I don't... Again, though, what do you hear on 9/11? What do you hear? What do you hear all the time? You hear the 911 calls.
Yeah, that's it.
Have you heard one utterance of anything like that?
No.
No. We see. I mean, the fact that the children was in this building too. I don't know when the last report that I heard on a Friday night when I was traveling was it was 11 o'clock at night. This happened at 9:30 that morning. They still hadn't removed any of the bodies. I'm just saying that there's all kinds of very goofy stuff that
is goofy. I will say that.
And again, I'm not a big conspiracy buff. But one of the reports that I had seen had mentioned something about the power or something being cut to the surveillance cameras. You know, none of this really makes sense.
Do you have a thought before I give my conspiracy theory to that?
I really let's kick on another quick thing. Here's a minute and a half of a early shooting report.
Okay.
Information as well. Pete, good morning.
Matt, good morning to you. This continues to be a very complex investigation, and there's a lot of contradictory information out there, but there is some new information this morning from a couple of federal officials and state officials. They say now that there were actually four handguns recovered inside the school, not just two, as we were initially told. Four handguns, and apparently only handguns, that were taken into the school. We knew that Adam Lanza, the man said to be the gunman here, also had a assault-style, AR-15-style rifle that he had taken to the school. It was in the car he drove there, his mother's car. But we've been told by several officials that he left that in the car. We're also told that on the 11th of December, on Tuesday of this week, Adam Lanza went to a sporting goods store in Danbury, Connecticut, and tried to buy another rifle, but was denied the ability to buy the rifle for a couple of reasons. One is that Connecticut is among the states with stricter gun regulations, and there's a waiting period, so he was denied the rifle for that. And finally, and this may be the most telling piece of information, on the 13th of December, there was, and this, we've been told this by a couple of officials, there was some kind of altercation. He went to the school, got in an argument with four staff members, and we're still trying to determine what the nature of that is.
I've never heard anything else about that.
I didn't either. But
I mean, did he have the Bushmaster with him, or did he leave it in the car? This was the next day, so now we're and this is NBC News, and the guy, I mean, they sound like they're very solid on their sources. What was the weapon of choice? What was the weapon of choice?
It sounds to me like it was just pistols, but there were four?
One of the other things, too, is the fact that this investigation, they said that building is going to be off limits for months. So this investigation is going to be ongoing for months. If we've got one shooter who is dead,
what's the investigation?
And why do we know already it's going to be going on for months? None
and
of that
we
really.
We don't have any video from it. Now, here's my thought on the whole thing. And they're talking about taking semi-automatic weaponry, but it sounds like it's not just 9mm pistols. Off there. This is specifically going for gun regulations.
Let me just say that the UN Small Arms Treaty that the United States has signed on to, really, we've got to encourage the Senate not to ratify it. But even by
we signed on to something with the UN.
Yes, we're one of the 133 nations
that would be Obama. Obama signed
absolutely.
Something with
it was
UN.
It was something that was rejected a couple of months ago, and within a week after the shooting, that it was encouraged to be brought back up. And I'm thinking it was 133. It might have been 136, but I'm thinking it was 133 that signed on to that. We were one of them, along with others. Now that has to be ratified by 2/3 of the Senate, but the bottom line is that in that bill, the UN would require the state nation or the ones that are involved or signed on to this to have documentation of every single gun owner in the state. Now, that doesn't mean those with concealed carry. That doesn't mean the rest. It means everybody that possesses a gun. The UN would require
from your dad.
The UN would require that there be documentation and paperwork on that. Now, it only goes to say that if that isn't there, then we would be in violation. And not only that, but those that that didn't register are going to be criminal. I mean, so and this is projected as just to interfere with trade between countries. So there are all kinds of aspects, all kinds of things going on with this type of legislation and treaties and other things that stinks to high heaven.
Yeah, but the UN, this is what happened in Bosnia, what I was just talking about. That wasn't like their, was it their government that came in and took their guns? I need to call Farouk on this, because it seems to me the UN has their own police, don't they? Or is that where the TSA?
Yes, there are, you know, peacekeeping forces along with others. You know,
is that what we're calling them now?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's also what they were called whenever they were raping some of the local villagers.
Oh, good.
In Africa. But whenever we're looking at this scenario, we have got a situation too, to where if you're involved in this treaty, that only those that are in the UN body can you trade arms with. So, like, let's say that China, let's just say that, like, well, for one thing, we supply, we're one of the main suppliers of arms to Taiwan.
Yeah.
They're not in the UN. So China could object, and boom, you know, we cannot supply arms to Taiwan. We look at, there's also provisions in this treaty that say that there, human rights, if there's a violation of human rights and other things, then another country can object and then block the trade. Well, you know, who is accused of human rights violations more than Israel? By the rest of the countries that are in the Middle East, and they could easily block sales to Israel of weaponry. So
they would.
You've got all kinds of different scenarios that are included.
Well, no, I think you just nailed it right there. That's a big one.
Well, let me ask you: have you ever seen in front of the big UN building in New York? There is a statue, a monument out front.
Okay.
It is a gun with the barrel tied in a knot. Okay. Now, this is, it's a great big monument.
Yeah.
And it's a revolver, folks. It's not, I mean, the monument itself is a revolver. It's not an AK-47. It's not any of the rest of this stuff. It's not an automatic weaponry. It is a revolver. You can look it up. Just Google under images. You know, UN monument pistol, and you'll see. I mean, it's plain as day, and it's been there for quite some time. So we know what the agenda is, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Here is another scenario, and I'll see if you remember this. It's really short.
They did walk a guy out of the woods. I saw him walk a guy out earlier with handcuffs. He walked by us and said he didn't do it.
It was a grown man.
A grown man, yeah. He's sitting in the front of the police car over there now. So, I mean,
he didn't have a gun?
No, I didn't see any gun. Just had him handcuffed. And he walked by us and looked into parents' eyes and said, I didn't do it.
How was he dressed?
Camo pants with a dark jacket.
What about the other people that were interviewed? There was like supposedly three other people that went through interviews, and nobody knows any names. Nobody knows anything else that's going on. There are so many things that for them to jump out of the gate and be all over this and be all over the place, and for there to be no follow-up on so many other things.
No facts came out of that.
No facts came out of that.
No.
There was just an immediate report that they got a gunman out of the woods, and that's it. It went away. But
although maybe these
granted, keep in mind too, his dad was dead, right?
Okay, I didn't know that. I thought it was just mom. Dad died too.
They said that there was a dead body in his home in Jersey, and they thought that it was that of the father, that his girlfriend was missing. And again, we're talking about Ryan.
All right.
This was before it came out that Adam.
Yes.
Well, then they said, no, his dad is alive.
Okay.
So his dad's alive, but they don't know the identity of the dead body in the home.
So it was mine.
No, this was in a different. This was in his dad's home. That, what happened to that? All of a sudden now, I mean, there was absolute
misrepresented from the start. I think.
Yeah.
It was sensationalized. You know what happens when people start getting a hold of things and it goes. But they knew that there was two places. They were looking for the dad. I don't know.
I have never in my life heard any story get so screwed up. Any of them.
Honestly, no.
No.
It was really bad. And you know what? It's just we're not hearing anything out of it. And why is there going to be now? I'm really curious. Why would there be investigations going on? I mean, really, the next day, cleanup and patching.
Especially when the building is going to be, yeah, I mean, it's already been announced that it's going to go on for months, locked up.
I mean, I heard one story of the lady who was who made it through, saw him, she was underneath the desk, and there he walked right up, and she saw his legs, and he turned around and walked back out. Was it the nurse or somebody? But they lived, and, you know, you never hear anything back about... I've never heard anything back about any of it.
And the ghoulish.
It seems to me like there's just one person. She knew it. This is the first I heard about there being a guy in camo pants out there. So now, and you say there were four? There were three people?
There were supposedly three people interviewed extensively. This guy being one of them.
I'm intrigued now that I hear that it gives me new thought on why he crashed his hard drive, and I'd like to talk to those three people a little bit more. Why were they even there and around the schoolyard? Maybe it was innocent. Maybe they just found a couple people who were playing hooky, or they were just hanging out and, you know, drinking, smoking, just a little too close to school, and when the stuff went down, and they seemed to be pulled out of the woods. But maybe they were... friends of his.
I have no idea. The bottom line is who could know what to believe from this story, and that's one of the main points that I'm trying to make. This thing has been so skewered that there's numerous different contradictory stories.
But isn't that almost everything we get nowadays on all stories? They really
nothing like
this. Really, really bad. But everything's got its jaded one-sided angle.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And whenever we're looking, we'll be right back after a short break, but we're going to previously recorded section with Matt Gummersall, Dean, myself, Greg, and Richard Blowers at the 8 o'clock hour. We'll be right back with Eric Holder's statement of we need to brainwash the children. Right after this.
Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. You do walk a while, a country mile.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
And back to Hillbilly Logic. We've got Dean and Kevin in studio tonight at the 8 o'clock hour. We've got, we're going to hear from Matt Gemmersell in a previously recorded session that deals with disaster response. And believe me, I promise you, it's very informative. You will. That's a hillbilly guarantee.
I'll say.
By the way, it's and hopefully it's entertaining and very educational. I guarantee you that because
there's
really nobody I know of that's more informed than Matt.
No, no doubt about it.
And he is a guy that open carries.
I think we talk about that on the show.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, because we had just had dinner with him. You need to listen. Stay tuned.
And it's he's got a very, very solid Christian foundation.
The same sort of thing just happened in Denny's yesterday. Did you hear that?
With the police officers? Or the detectives, rather?
Yeah, in Belleville. Same sort of thing.
Unbelievable.
Well,
but that
people
was.
People don't really understand all laws. But in that situation, those are policemen.
Here we go. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, if you're showing badges, I am happy with the policemen being around and being armed.
I'm feeling pretty safe.
I feel safe when they're there. Absolutely. Let them carry.
You got six of them in a Denny's eating dinner, and they're all armed.
You're asking for your Denny's to get robbed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, this was a while back, and this was Eric Holder speaking before a group, and found some very interesting comments, especially late in this. It's a little over 3 minutes.
We want to have, as part of the gun initiative, though, an informational campaign to really change the hearts and minds of people in Washington, D.C., and in particular our young people. They are saturated in the media and in entertainment, or by the entertainment industry, with violence. And I think too many of our young people, in particular our young men, are fascinated with violence and in particular fascinated with guns. And what we need to do is change the way in which people think about guns, especially young people, and make it something that's not cool, that it's not acceptable, it's not hip to carry a gun anymore. In the way in which we've changed our attitudes about cigarettes, you know, when I was growing up, people smoked all the time. I mean, both my parents did. But over time, we changed the way in which people thought about smoking, and so now we have people who cower outside of buildings and kind of smoke in private and don't want to admit it. And that's what I think we need to do with guns, really change the way in which people think about guns. Now, this is not going to be something that's very easy to do, because we are, quite frankly, fighting something that appears, you know, every day on television, on the radio, in our popular music, in movies that these kids are exposed to. It will be an effort that will entail things that I'm really not familiar with. I think I'm a pretty good lawyer, but we need to get really innovative, creative things that are going to grab the attention of these kids and change, as I said, the way in which they think about guns. And so what I've asked is that the creative community in Washington, those ad agencies that create these snappy ads and make me buy things that I don't really need, devote that talent in a more constructive way so we can get at the minds of these young people. This informational campaign, I've also called on the newspapers and the television stations to devote to us time and space so that we can get these ads, so we can use these spots, and not to give us 1-2 o'clock in the morning ads when nobody's watching, but at the time when people, particularly young people, are watching television, so that when they're watching, you know, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or Martin or whatever else they watch, and yeah, I watch those things once in a while, so that they'll see these ads and they'll be grabbed by these ads. I've also asked people who have influence over youngsters, entertainers, athletes, to be involved in this program as well, but not only them, community leaders. Jesse Jackson, Mayor Barry, people who have credibility with young people should be on the television, on the radio, as much as we possibly can, and telling these youngsters that it's wrong to carry a gun, and that if you have information about people who are carrying guns, you've got to share that with Chief Thomas and with his people as well. I've also asked the school board to make a part of every day some kind of anti-violence, anti-gun message. Every day, every school, at every level. One thing that I think is clear with young people and with adults as well is that we just have to be repetitive about this. It's not enough to simply have a catchy ad on a Monday and then only do it every Monday. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way. We also want to have a hotline that we will set up and have the number of that hotline that would just go out there, and that would be something that people would have emblazoned in their minds so that when they see a gun or become familiar about the facts of a gun crime, they would call that hotline and pass that information on.
All right, now, did anything in particular jump out in that recording, that three-minute recording?
Marion Barry.
Yeah. Incredible.
Role model, incredible, yeah. Person to look to. It made me want to.
That of crack fame and prostitution.
Absolutely.
Yeah. but you know what? He did come back and get reelected out of prison, I believe. So.
Way to go, Marion.
But this was recorded some time ago. So
yeah,
I think I saw actually it may have been even 1995. So but here's the point. So this has been an ongoing thing, and here he's talking about using Hollywood and others to brainwash our children to think of guns in a negative way. Now
that's
see,
been working. He's had 18 years at it.
Right.
It's a whole new generation.
Here's the thing though. I mean, you know, you remember the original, I mean, whenever Fast and Furious first came out, to the only thing that made sense.
Right.
If you remember, right before all of that stuff broke, there was talk that we were responsible for some of the violence in Mexico because we were where they were getting their arms.
Right.
Now, that was before they knew the government was providing them to the drug lords.
Right.
So they were trying to blame it on small arms dealers and stuff in Arizona and everything, and they were trying to use the tragic situation in Mexico to go after gun rights in the country.
18 years ago, and now they're going after them. Now, any scenario they get, they use. Look at this.
So this is, I mean, the day that this happened, we had protesters in front of the White House. On Friday evening, there was protesters in front of the White House. So it is, again, in the words of Rahm Emanuel, never let a crisis go to waste. they they are really, really, really trying to expedite legislation to try to strip gun rights from American citizens, law-abiding American citizens.
Exactly.
And, you know, first of all, that's the only ones that gun laws are going to affect, is law-abiding citizens.
The bad guys will keep their guns, and so will the police.
And that is, you know, that's a no-brainer.
Oh, and the people coming in from the, you know, world, whatever Obama signed, the UN, their police, they have guns.
Sure they do.
They have the automatic ones that we're voting
now,
down, so we can't have any more.
Here's the strange thing, and it's something that the UN and other bodies like that, it's the way that they think, and that is it's all right for the government to possess these weapons.
Sure.
They don't want the citizenry to possess it.
That's it?
That it's up to the governments to protect their citizens.
It should be.
Now,
go ahead.
Except for.
Yeah.
You look around at all of the despot leaders and others that we have. Do you think Assad in Syria is protecting his people right now? Do you think Saddam Hussein or any of these others were protecting their people?
Oh no. We bring the most beautiful women to the palaces and kill the men.
Yes. And his boys too.
And the boys. And, oh no, it's worse than that.
But what I'm saying is it's all right for those individuals in control to have the weaponry, but not the citizens.
We're hypocritical. I see the same thing here. Our legislation says, hey, we shouldn't have guns. They all jump on the bandwagon. You know, I do auctions. I did an auction not long ago, and God bless you all. I love you here. Governor Jay Nixon and some people were at one of my auctions, and you know what? He had a solid half a dozen of the men in black with the glasses and the earpieces, and I guarantee you every single one of them was packing. And I'm happy. I'm happy. I want him to be protected. But when he leaves and takes his entourage with him, I don't want to wait 6 minutes for somebody, you know, our police or 10 minutes or wherever they are to show up when something bad is happening. You know, it's the bad guys with the gun that are a problem. They're not going to go out and get the conceal and carries. They're not going to register
their weapon. They just don't do it. Wake up, everybody.
You know,
they've got cheap guns, and nobody knows the serial numbers, and that's just how it works. They're only going to come after us that have registered our weapons and bought them in a legal manner to protect ourselves. And I think I heard it said best, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
And here's another thing, too. Again, I'm still looking for the example where gun restrictions and gun legislation works.
If you find it, let me know.
Let's just say even, all right, let's just, and again, they chip away, chip. But let's just say the magazines that carry many rounds,
right.
Okay? Let's say that they're all banned tomorrow.
Okay.
Do you believe that will have an effect on shootings or crime?
None whatsoever, because nobody that has one that's a law-abiding citizen is shooting anyone anyway.
Absolutely.
It's pretty simple, it seems like.
We look at how many hunters is in this country. Millions,
right,
folks.
Right.
Millions.
How many people get shot other than what was our vice president?
How many?
Janie. Yeah,
a little bird shot. I mean, he brushed it off. It was,
sure, he didn't kill anybody.
But here's the thing. I mean, we had the one guy that went on a rampage during a deer hunt and killed three or four hunters. You know, maybe a half dozen years ago, somewhere around there. Do you remember when that happened? He got aggravated with some other hunters and shot and killed a few of them. But that is the only.
That's the only one
I can ever recall.
Yeah.
I mean, ever recall.
Nope.
Now, there are instances to where somebody wanted to kill somebody,
right,
and on a hunting trip, killed them.
Absolutely. And there was the stray bullet thing that happened here a
right.
few years ago.
And that's what I'm talking about, too. And that was an instance where a guy knew where a guy was hunting.
Oh, he wasn't even. He was driving. He was waiting for him to drive along
right.
and popped him on the way by and tried to call it an accidental because it was hunting season.
So
turns out the guy was having an affair with the other guy's wife, just so everyone knows. It
right.
was premeditated.
Right.
It wasn't even an accidental.
And they both, he's still doing time, and she did time, too.
It's bad. She was going to dump him. She had a different guy.
Well, that's why he came out,
right.
from my understanding,
right.
and told the whole story. It's because he was
unrequited
jealous
love.
And mad.
That's exactly it.
So, it's, again... It's very, very, very rare for any incidences. And you look at how well armed the hunters are, and literally the time spent in there. There's accidents that do happen. They're not widespread.
No, they're fairly well trained. Usually, a hunter is trained. He's taken oftentimes, especially nowadays.
Well, now they're required to.
They take a course. Absolutely.
By the time they're 18.
Yes.
You know, if you're not, if you don't have it and you're older than 18, you can't even go.
That's right. And let me tell you, I grew up at a time and in a place here in Jefferson County, which is not that far out from St. Louis. It's country enough, but you know what? When we were 12, 13 years old, we had shotguns as kids and 22s, and we'd go squirrel hunting and rabbit hunting, and it was not a big deal. You learned early on, and don't shoot your friends.
Always,
you know, yeah,
always good advice.
Simple.
You know, the one thing I never did understand, though, and that was, and you don't see it anymore, but whenever we were growing up, you always saw it. And even as a kid, I'm looking at it and going, holy cow, I can't believe.
Yeah.
And that's the marquees at gas stations. You know, Deer Hunter Special, 5th of Jack Daniels, blah, blah, blah. You know, and it's like, there's an idea.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get everybody liquored up with high-powered rifles and, you know, send them out in the woods.
Liquor, ammo, and right.
But, I mean, as a kid, I'm looking at that and saying, man, that's not right.
Isn't our, what's our bureau, though? Isn't that the Bureau of Tobacco and Firearms?
BATF.
There you go.
Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
Well, I think that says it all right there.
You know what? That's a conspiracy in itself.
Maybe it is.
Maybe it is.
That shouldn't be a bureau. That should be a store.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what, I did a little work in their building in downtown St. Louis one time.
Oh, really?
Cow. Yeah, you talk, I mean, everything from the drywall was bulletproof to the glass was bulletproof to you name it, some high security. Well, I guess. I mean, it's not even in, I'm not given locations other than St. Louis. It's
exactly.
a pretty big area.
Exactly.
And,
right.
and I don't even think it exists. And that was before the Eagleton was built and all the rest of that, too. I don't even know where it is now.
That's
but,
right.
But I heard some very strange conversations in there. I can tell you that. And I wasn't trying to hear them.
But, no, I can well imagine.
And there's, you know, there's a lot of... a lot of mystery and so forth around some of these agencies.
You know what, though? We see some stuff. Working here in St. Louis, have you ever worked at NEMA?
NEMA, no. But there's... I did work at Defense Mapping, and that was pretty high security.
Same thing.
Is it?
Yeah, this was the one downtown. I know there's two locations. But you know, they check you on the way, and they checked our buckets of mud.
Oh, yeah.
To make sure it was really mud inside there. Looking underneath the vehicle.
They taste it?
No, but they had somebody walk with us everywhere we
sissies.
Went at all times. It was amazing, and I'm glad they're like that.
Oh, absolutely. You know? I mean, I've seen situations at Boeing where you got a hangar or something where they're working on some top secret thing on the other side of the hangar. Somebody knocked a hole in a wall, and they put a guard in a chair underneath the hole, and he sat there until it was repaired.
There you go.
And some of those areas, those guys will follow you in the restroom.
Yes.
And follow
she
you back.
She waited outside the restroom for us, the West Wing. Yes.
That's in the West Wing.
We had a female. You know, she was retired from there, so I think they get to keep working for a while as a, whatever you call that, someone who just walks around with you.
I got you.
Escort. Yeah.
Not the bad kind of escort.
No, she was my 78-year-old escort.
You know, one of the things, as we're getting ready to close things out here, we got about 10 minutes to go before Matt Gummersall and the whole gang, including us, we'll try to share some different ideas and disaster response and rifles and guns. And
I think it's something good to be talking about. And just in finishing, that's what I was going to say before we listened to the Holder clip was just the lady who was under the table. There's a woman who I'm sure after listening to Matt, she wishes she would have had a gun because she could have shot him in the knees, although she probably wishes she'd have been quiet. But I guess my whole thought with her was since she knows there's only one person in there, and as you stated that before, the shooter killed himself, you raised such a wonderful question. You've got me pondering that.
I just here's the point. I'm not trying to just lob any accusations. I'm just saying.
Say it.
So much of it doesn't make sense. There is something stinks.
Yeah, it does.
All the way around, it stinks. I don't know if it's.
Do you have any idea? What was your thought?
I'm not going to. I don't want to be irresponsible like the press.
Oh, good for you.
Or run around and interview, first graders
right,
as they're leaving
minutes.
That scenario.
Tell me in 8 minutes.
But,
I'll tell them next week you were right.
but I'm just saying that, and again, you know, I'm not big or into buying into conspiracy theories and everything else, but there's too much that just absolutely.
Unanswered.
Positively doesn't make sense. At very best, we're not being fully informed for a purpose and a reason. And I think that is legislative agendas.
That's exactly right.
So if they know, I truly believe we're not being told all the details so that they can leave some mystery out there, so they can make it into something that it wasn't. As horrible as it was.
I know.
Why do you have to?
You don't have to. But when you make false accusations and people hear things, they believe it. Because
again,
when you hear it on the radio or on the TV, you believe it. This is very easy for them.
I want to know.
I do too.
I want to know, did it occur with pistols or did it occur with the Bushmaster?
That's exactly right.
Because the politicians are absolutely positively leading the story with the Bushmaster,
and
it is agenda driven.
I don't think it was even used.
And that's the point.
And he didn't buy it anyway.
No, he didn't.
So
it was a crime when he killed his mother. It was a crime when he stole her guns. It was a crime to go in a gun free zone.
And when you in New York now, they're posting everyone's address who owns a gun. So that's a very easy way to have people get your house broken into. And when you tell them there's guns in there, these days guns are valuable. So break in, find where the gun is, and then they can use it against the homeowner too. Thanks a lot.
Or wait until they're gone and go in and rob them.
Idiots.
I mean, that's the I actually. we worked with a guy one time.
Tell this story. We won't give his name.
That would start up gun conversations.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. You like guns? You own guns?
Oh yeah, yeah, man. You like I love everything about guns. I like to read about them. I like to. Hey, do you have any magazines?
Yeah.
Bring them in.
Oh, I'll bring you a magazine. Yeah,
okay.
Got some
so guess what? You bring in the magazines, and what's on the magazines?
Your address.
Your
when
address.
It was sent to your home address.
Well, guess what?
What?
He's working with you, so guess who he knows is at work?
Me.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Guess who isn't with you?
His buddy that he calls and goes to your address because he has your address and robs you of all your guns. And you've already buddied up to this guy, so you've told him, oh, I've got them in a safe, or no, I've got them, but they're kind of under the bed, they're safe, you know, and he robbed, more than one.
And here's the thing, you know, here we've got a newspaper that is posting these addresses for everyone.
Oh,
the home addresses.
Irresponsible.
Oh, it's beyond irresponsible. It's criminal.
It is. It absolutely is.
And here's the other aspect with that, too, and that is, you know, here the same media does not want to publish, like, felons' addresses or child molesters' addresses or any of these other people because they feel like they're violating a person's rights. But they will post the address of somebody that is a legal gun owner.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. And criminal, like we said.
It is, absolutely.
Well, Dino, I certainly appreciate you coming in and joining us this evening.
I wish I was more upbeat for you for this one.
No, you did great. It is a unique time. We've got a lot of challenges ahead of us, a lot of challenges ahead of us. I got my first paycheck since the 2% payroll tax has been added back.
Oh, you're lucky. I got my first layoff last week. I've been looking forward to. I haven't had one.
So let's just say that you and your wife, let's just say your household makes $60,000. You will be noticing $1,200 or roughly $100 a month less in income in at this particular
household
time.
If I make 60 grand.
If you make 60 or if you make 30 and your wife makes 30, it doesn't matter. It's 2%.
Right.
So, and again, yeah. I mean, this is just one. And whenever the congressmen were running around, or whenever the president is saying that he's going to save 98% of the public or the citizens from a tax hike, all of that stuff. I mean, it's all make believe.
It is make believe.
All of it is.
Well, are they going to pass something now to stop that and bring it back down and act like they reduced taxes?
No.
Well, of course not.
No, it's not.
Still up to $16 trillion.
Oh, we're beyond that. I mean, from what I understand, yes, and from what I understand, what they passed is going to add another 3.7, I want to say, trillion to it in the next 8 years.
But we had to get this done. We had to get this done because we're going to go over the fiscal cliff. We have to get this done immediately.
You know what?
Immediately. Hurry up and sign.
Here's the killer, and there's the crisis again. So say, and you had both parties running around calling it the fiscal cliff. I mean, both parties. Now, debt ceiling, they're still going to deal with.
I know, but what was it before this? We've got something that's been going on now for, this is their new thing. They wait until the
absolutely
11th hour, 59 minutes, and we have to pass something immediately because, the country's going to fall apart if we don't.
Let me just add that this thing, it wasn't a New Year's that this was lost. It was back when they negotiated this deal, and it was obvious. When they negotiated this whole deal back whenever they tried to raise the debt ceiling last time, and their logic was this will force us to get together to hammer out a detail. That tells you how inept they are. And just like with anything else, you know, everybody's focusing on what went wrong now and what happened now, and you have them saying that we were in a bad position, we couldn't do anything else. It was lost some time ago. It was that action that set this whole thing rolling. And people need to look back to where this originated. That's where it was lost.
Absolutely.
And that's why the leadership is so crappy and pathetic. And these guys are being schooled by our community organizer president. I mean, he has literally spanked them at every chance that he gets. I mean, you can't say much more than that.
Right.
It's just bold. It's out there. It's in your face. And even in this scenario, he's scolding them as this whole thing is going on. I mean, he is playing these guys like a fine-tuned fiddle, and it's sad to watch. It's sad to see. And again, you know, I feel like you got people trapped in both parties that feel trapped.
Well, the sad part is it's so transparent. You call it easily.
It is easily seen. I mean, quite frankly, you just got to be living in your own little world. Which it's getting to the point where I almost don't blame people for tuning out because it is so disgusting and so aggravating.
It is, but it's just going to get so much worse if we do tune out.
And if we tune out, then you've got your Second Amendment rights is violated, everything else. And that's something that Eric Holder didn't say anything about in that piece either, whenever he's talking about we just need to make people know that this isn't cool and we need to change their mind and make them think bad things about guns.
Right.
I think
our forefathers were thinking about some of the shootings that were going on, not just here in the, I'm talking about like downtown, I live in St. Louis, okay, downtown St. Louis. It could be downtown L.A. It can be downtown anywhere. And you know what, there's bad guys with guns. So quite often they're automatics and they're drive-bys, and it's a bad world we live in. Our forefathers weren't thinking of that with our guns. They were thinking about home protection and in case there was a bad government.
Think about somewhere real quick, and we're running out of time, but think about some of the cities where most of the riots and stuff occur.
Okay.
Some of the toughest gun laws in the country. L.A., constantly.
Yeah.
You know, Chicago, New York.
Chicago, there you
go. All of these are
LA's
extremely
tough.
Now, Chicago is the third largest city in the country.
Right.
Large minority population. You look at Houston, large minority population.
There's no guns in LA.
Fourth largest city. So you got a lot of scenarios that are similar, except for Houston. The only thing that you can't have a criminal record to have a gun. And that's the only requirement. So they give out guns left and right in Houston. They've never suffered a riot.
There you go.
And again, it's like, once again, why do the riots always occur in the gun-free zones?
Because the bad guys have guns and the good guys.
Absolutely.
I know.
And they're not foolish enough to riot in Houston.
I went to school in Dallas for the Texas Auction Academy, and everyone there said that was from Texas, which was three-quarters of the class, said we all care. We've all got guns on us right now. And I said, you know, I've never felt so safe.
You
said someone's mercy in my entire life. I came straight home and got a concealed carry for myself.
You won't see riots. You won't see riots in these areas. You will not.
Not a bit.
You're gonna see them in the violence and the unrest in the areas with the strictest gun control. And we're gonna
talk about it.
You betcha. Thanks for joining me this evening,
thanks,
Dino.
Okay.
And actually we're gonna continue here in just a second. On this pre-recorded section with Matt, as soon as I can locate her here.
It's good stuff, though. Hang on.
And I am, there she is. Thank you very much.
We have special guests in, of course. Richard Blowers has been joining us for the whole session, the whole series, I should say. We've got Greg Harned, who is a co-host of the show, and Dean Whiteman, who is also a co-host. Also tonight for this appearance is Matt Gummersall. And Matt is the owner-operator of a business called Sovereign Arms. And if you could, Matt, just give everybody your elevator speech and let them know what Sovereign Arms is all about.
Sure. Thanks a lot. This is Matt with Sovereign Arms, LLC. We are a retail gun store located in Arnold, Missouri, right on the corner of 141 Highway 21. We have an indoor pistol range there. We do Missouri, Florida concealed carry classes as well as advanced training classes. We also provide bodyguarding executive protection services. We have an online store, e-commerce store as well, and we also have online auctions and so forth. We specialize in doing the training with the Missouri Florida Concealed Carry classes, have trained about 2,500 people there in the past 2.5 years.
That's great.
Yeah.
Great service. The one thing that we talked about, and we just had dinner across the
street that was awesome.
At Lloyd and Harry's, beautiful, rustic downtown St. Charles. One of the things that we talked about was the level of confidence and the education that you provide people with your classes and courses.
Absolutely.
And how important that is.
Absolutely. And we find that all the time. And as we talked about during dinner, you just can't prepare people in a 10-hour concealed carry course to really be ready to fight for their life in an actual attempt on somebody's life. It just doesn't happen like that, and it's not a reality. And so I'm such a proponent of advanced training, coming back, lots of practice, and that's why we offer those extended courses that go way beyond concealed carry, and they're very effective. And we have the people that actually come and actually take the course generally will come back and take more courses. But out of 2,500 people in 2.5 years, we probably have had about less than 0.5% actually come back and take the advanced training. And I really wish that it was different, because there's such a responsibility in carrying the firearm. And life is very sacred. We want to teach people how to protect it. And part of that is the responsibility of making sure, and I teach this in our class, you're just as responsible for your hits as you are for your misses. You're just as responsible for the car that drives by with a baby in the back seat, or standing in front of Walmart or Macy's or wherever you're at, that if you would ever have to use a firearm in self-defense, that you're going to be very capable with that firearm. And you just can't get that just from going through the bare minimum requirement of passing the CCW class.
And you also have a philosophy that I really appreciate, that we really appreciate.
Okay.
And that is a Christian philosophy.
Absolutely.
And some people don't think it mixes and mashes.
Mm-hmm.
We know better.
Yes, sir.
Right.
And we really appreciate how, you know, you share that.
Praise God. I do, and I'm not ashamed to be a Christian. Absolutely everything that I'm doing is I try to teach from a biblical perspective without hammering that down people's throats. But there is lots and lots of biblical precedent for protecting life, even with weapons, going back to Genesis chapter 3 all the way through 2 Kings chapter 11, and even into the New Testament. It's important for people to respect life and to value it as being sacred. And I think that includes both sides of the firearm, and even showing and extending as much grace and mercy as you could possibly extend, even to somebody that's making a horrific choice maybe in their life. And hopefully, by extending grace and mercy, somebody could have a heart change later and actually be redeemed and have a whole new avenue of life that they're going down. So.
Absolutely. And one of the things, and again, we're going to get into our emergency response. I was just wanting to set the table and just give you guys some background on that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We got some background on the rest of us.
Okay.
So,
yeah, don't do a background check.
Right.
Check background. 4473 next check. Right?
One of the things, and it kind of hit close to home, too, one of the things that you do is you go in and you're teaching congregations how to protect themselves, too.
Yeah, we have a nationwide church security program, and part of that intertwines with some of the bodyguarding things that I teach and that I've trained. And we can either actually set up teams and churches nationwide and train them to be at a level of proficiency where they could guard international speakers that might come in, or somebody that would come in that would be a high-level international speaker, or we can provide those executive protection services on our own for a church nationwide.
And having an older brother, both Greg and I, that his pastor was gunned down in front of the congregation, unfortunately that is a... you know, that's something that's a reality.
Yeah, it is, and it's very sad. Sorry to cut you off.
Right.
I remember when we talked about that on the show the last time, and the way the laws are structured, it really makes it like shooting fish in a bucket for a criminal to go into a place of worship and to be able to take advantage of the fact that most of the people there will be unarmed. And I think that, and I have that in my, you know, online on our website and in our brochures, but I think it's a responsibility of a shepherd that really loves his flock in today's cultural climate to not just be protecting them spiritually, but to be protecting them physically and making sure that there is not a way of easily attacking the church or the flock that's within that particular venue.
If you could you share the website and other information?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. Our website is www.sovereign.com. sovereignarms.com. We're the only Sovereign Arms, I believe, that sells firearms and does this type of stuff. So if you just Google sovereignarms.com, you'll be able to find that.
Greg, did you have a question?
No, that was exactly it.
Okay.
I just was interested.
And Matt, for all of those that are out there and would like to find out more and more and more of this, they can either contact you through Sovereign Arms,
sure,
or they could catch the next episode that you join us on. Because
oh, and I'd love to come back.
Asked you before the show, and you were more than willing, so let's make that.
And I'm going to tell you, I know he's full of information because as he was trying to eat a sandwich, I couldn't lay off of the poor guy, and he just kept it up gracefully, just answering me going, shut up. But he didn't say
anything. He almost made me choke on my food.
But no, it was he's just a wealth of information, and he's very articulate with his knowledge.
Thank you.
So.
Appreciate that.
Now, moving along to emergency response, and, you know, everything that we're talking about is part of emergency response because it's going to be an emergency whenever you have to come across to actually have to apply some of this knowledge. One of the things that we've seen recently is the tornado in Joplin, which was devastating.
Yeah, right.
The news today, they let out that it was they have everybody accounted for. So there's no more on the list of missing.
Amen for that.
Yeah.
That's a blessing. The bad thing is a lot of them were deceased, you know. But I think the final count was 134, you know, family members.
Did they find all the
individuals?
All the they call deceased?
That with the list of missing down to zero and then 134 counting.
Wow, it
was very sad. For anybody that happens to be living in that area and needs any assistance, you can contact the Federal Emergency Management Agency at 1-800-621-3362 if you haven't yet, or also apply directly online at www.disasterassistance.gov. Those with medical skills, of course, you could still check online at showmeresponse.org, and I'm sure that they could utilize your services. Again, you know, just looking around at the different sites that you can give money to if you don't have the ability to go there and assist. There is a site that is highly recommended. It is C is in Charlie, F is in Frank, Ozarks. .org /Joplin. So cfozarks.org/Joplin. That is going to be an all local administered donation contribution site. What it is going to do is they're going to have all people that live in the community that decide where all the funds go. They're going to lean heavily toward funding all the churches and all the other nonprofits that are down there helping them. And 100% of the proceeds is supposed to go directly to relief, no overhead.
That's wonderful.
So it's cfozarks.org, Joplin. Now, unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that we talked about, you get hit with something as devastating as what they got hit with. You know, even if you're prepared, it may not be there for you.
That's true.
The knowledge will be.
That's true. And it did show one point that we started off this series with, and that was a contact list.
Absolutely.
You should have a central. Look how important it is
to have
a central person out of the region that you can contact, let mom and dad know I am okay, I am alive,
right.
And then they can carry the message on. And we were able to talk about that at several outings this last weekend where people had not even thought.
Well, you had,
that cost you zero.
Right. You had less than a week ago, there was 1,500 missing. So,
right.
I mean, that would have greatly relieved that.
Sure.
And sometimes, many times, it's easier to have that contact out of the area. You actually have a better chance of getting a hold of them. One of the things that's also questions that come up in instances like this is, you know, I'd like to help, but who do I see? And many times the place that you're going to want to start is with the fire department. They're going to be the most knowledgeable on a lot of the different reliefs that are going on. Unless there's been something called an incident command system that's been put in place, it's usually put in place, and like Katrina had one. And I think the government really does a very poor job on explaining what an incident command system is. Most people, 99 out of 100, I guarantee, haven't even heard of the term. And, you know, you hear that one individual happens to be overseeing the thing, but you don't know the structure. You don't know, well, you know.
That's true. Well, here's how it would typically work if it's a government. I would tell Richard. Richard
now you're getting
would,
into politics.
Richard would tell you. You would tell Dean, and the only one who would be working would be Matt.
Sounds like MoDOT. Right.
Just you playing.
Know, OSHA or the EPA is usually the ones that call on the incident command system, too. So, I mean, honestly, it doesn't have to be the fire department, but most of the time it's headed by the fire department. What they do is they try to plan for the managing of the people and the resources. Yeah, of course, at the top of that, you have the incident commander, and that's the person in charge. Sometimes they can be the same person as what's called the liaison officer, and that's always the first point of contact. It doesn't have to be on a smaller scale disaster. Then the incident commander can be both the liaison officer All and right. the incident commander. The safety officer is always going to be somebody that's appointed on the site, and they are responsible for the safety and health of all the workers who happen to be.
But basically, all we need to know is who we're going to contact, the fire department.
Yeah, but that is
but,
not.
But these other yo-yos, you'll never remember
right.
all that stuff.
But the thing, there are some key things to remember.
I'm blanked out.
You were blanked out when you got here. There were some key things to remember, and that is, first and foremost, you're going to have one person in contact. You want to keep the chain of command. Mm-hmm. And because, I mean, that is the way, that's the only way to keep it from being chaotic. And so remember to keep your chain of contact. You're one person. You want to give your skills whenever you come in and wait to be assigned. Don't just go out and start working in areas, because many times you can have gas lines, you can have other things that are problems, and if there's an explosion, they don't know how many
extra
people.
If I took my pick out and hit a raw gas line, I'd probably cause more problems.
And looting too. I mean,
looting.
You know,
absolutely.
We even had that situation just in Sunset Hills. A couple weeks.
Really,
ago.
Really, looters.
Had,
looters
yeah,
actually hit Sunset Hills.
A couple months ago, we had that tornado came through Sunset Hills, and they actually had to have the Sunset Hills police out there overnight. Several police cars there, making sure that people wouldn't come in and loot.
Right.
So that is definitely a concern.
Unfortunately, that's
in big areas like Chaplin or like with Katrina. I mean, it was
right.
really out of control with Katrina.
Extremely.
Oh yeah.
And that's the reality that we live in today in the society. Always make sure you know where the first aid stations are in case you do need to get somebody there or you yourself have to get there. What the evacuation procedures and signals are. We got a case of that, you know, whenever the World Trade Towers went down. And there's a classic case where you had people that were going in for people that were out. They were out of the building, but nobody could account for them. So you had people going in to rescue people that were no longer in there, and they lost their lives in doing it. So, you know, if you work at a place of, well, if you're at a place of business, anything else, you should have a place designated for all the employees to get together in case there's ever an evacuation so that everybody can be accounted for, so that you don't put somebody at risk that really is unnecessary. Because it's valiant for anybody to lay down their life for another soul. But it's
pointless.
You know, it's such a waste whenever it's unnecessary.
Right.
And I know that you guys can appreciate that. But just keep the chain of command, and just find out what hazards are present, and just be accounted for.
Cool.
Richard, now we talked about many things. We've talked about food storage. We've talked about food supplies, different ways to cook it. Many different things. And we're going to get into the firearms and the protection of our properties here real soon. Some of the neat little gadgets that we talked about, too, for instance, and a lot of it you can use in your camping trips and so forth, so it's not a waste, and it's definitely not a waste if you need it in the case of a disaster. Just like that little Black & Decker power unit that I bought that you know, carries a nice charge for quite some time. I mean, if say somebody's got a CPAP machine, if they've got sleep apnea, you know, many times you go camping, you got to leave all that stuff at home. That will run your unit. It'll run your unit for probably a couple of days.
Really?
Yeah, quiet.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So, it's got that little thing. Yeah, $99 at Home Depot. If you've got a little local business, though, too, that carries these units, it's always good to shop, you know, with the little local stores, too. But... that thing will jump your car. It'll air up your tires. It'll do any number of things. Check your alternator. You know, run your CPAP. It does all kinds of things for $100. Yeah, it's a great little tool. Richard brought in tonight something that he's bought in this last week, and it's actually a little solar panel charger that he's had some fun playing around with. Rich?
We talked about this a couple weeks ago with regard to smartphones.
Yeah.
And even though you didn't have service, you can use smartphones for a lot of information storage and maps and survival manuals, all sorts of different things. And we had a caller that asked about how do you keep that phone charged up if you don't have electricity? Well, this little gem right here is exactly for that. And it's got a 4 AA battery pack that I got, and these batteries are supposed to be some of the best rechargeable, so it's real small. It's what, 2x3 is the size of this thing. And I killed it one night just to run it down and see how long it would take charging with the solar panel. And it took, I had it hanging in the sun. It was mostly sunny, a little bit of haze. It took about 2.5 hours, and this little thing was fully charged, and it'll charge a smartphone completely 2 times on that one charge. Wow. So, and you could use this to power any number of devices, anything that you can connect with a USB. It's got a mini USB here,
which is a lot of things.
Almost everything. And if it doesn't directly do it, you can get an adapter. This thing came with a lot of different adapters for numerous different cell phones.
Wow!
And you just plug it in and then charge it up. It's got little hooks on it, so you can, you fold it down like this. You got two basic small panels, and it's got hooks all the way around it. I just hooked it on a little ring in the back of my van and made sure it was facing the sun more or less, and it did a great job. It's super light. You could put it on top of a backpack if you were backpacking.
Right, and I've seen...
While you're traveling anyway,
take advantage of it.
Yep.
I was amazed at how bright that light was. It comes with a little LED light.
No, this was something I got extra, but it's a USB-powered... kind of like a flexible that'll hold its shape. It's got a series of LEDs in it, but this is enough to where if you had to look at a map or you wanted to read a book or something like that, or even on your computer, my computer doesn't have lighted keys on it, so I can plug this in the USB on my computer and stand it up and face it towards the keys, and it lights it all up. I think this was like $9 or something.
So you can use that as a light with your battery.
Yeah, you could use this with the battery pack, and it would last forever because it's LED. They use virtually no power. You know, it would last a really long time.
Now, the solar panel that you bought, that setup was, how much did you say?
The solar panel is $100, and then this little battery pack with no batteries was $22, and the batteries themselves, I think I got 8 of them, and they were $20, but... Doing some research on the batteries, these things are supposed to be, they don't develop a memory, they charge quick, and they'll really put the power out. So I've got 2 sets of those, and I can keep those charged up. Plus, they don't drop power when they're not in use. Once you charge them and set them aside, they don't drop power. After a month, they'll still have 90% of the power on them,
I believe.
What the spec was. So that's a lot better than some of the rechargeable batteries that are out there.
Something you don't want to cheapen out on.
That's right. Because I've had rechargeable batteries in the past, and they just, I got a big universal remote for the entertainment center, and it's like...
Is it on a chain?
3 weeks, a big light on it and everything, and it would go down really fast. So,
I haven't had much luck with most of the rechargeable batteries.
Yeah, there's a difference in them. I'll open these up. I can't remember the brand on them. But
that's what we're talking about, though, is compact and the ability to reuse something.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're lessening what you have to carry or what you have to store.
Exactly.
This little unit will do a lot of things, just like the water filters that they have.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Will filter many gallons of water.
I meant to bring one of those little straw filters in today.
Right.
And,
those are very cheap.
Yeah.
What are those, Richard?
$9? $9?
Yeah, $10.
Yep.
And you can find them at Cabela's. Is where
a lot of different places have them.
Right.
I bought them from three different places now.
While Rich is looking for the battery manufacturer, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break.
Beat
tonight as we're joined by special guest Matt Gummersall of Sovereign Arms, Richard Blowers, Greg Harned, Dean Whiteman, and myself, Kevin Harned. We are discussing emergency response, and we are just about to get into the segment where we are talking about how to provide some protection for our family, our, you know, all the things that are valuable to us in life. And in these times, things get a little chaotic. Many times we're going to look around and you know, people that tend to be a little more novice. This is one area that I could highly suggest that you educate yourself to the max on.
Absolutely.
Because this is a matter of life and death, and you should always take very serious any type of usage of firearms. And if that's part of, you know, that protection. For instance, my brother Greg, I mean, he's always been around firearms, always used them, everything else. But just in a short conversation that we had with Matt over dinner, I mean, we learned an immense amount of information. There was a lot of information shared.
Right. It's just encompassing, really. I mean, there's a lot of information to be. You might handle a firearm, and you might have hunted a million times. But there's a big difference when you're actually talking about human life in the balance. Absolutely. Either yours or theirs or your children's,
right,
or your wife's.
Now, Dino over here to my right, he tends to be a scuba diver. Is there anything that you could suggest to Dean as
do
far as
the Glock? Do you shoot underwater?
Oh, there we go.
Another reason to buy a Glock. Put a special barrel on it, and you can actually shoot the Glock underwater.
Now, would that be a standard Glock?
The Glock, there's a special barrel that you would have to switch over to be able to shoot it underwater, but yes.
And how, I'm just curious now, I mean, you shoot it underwater, what, could I hit Mike
go.
Over there underwater?
I don't think we're looking for a flood here anytime soon.
But of course, I mean, the velocity is obviously going to be slowed down immediately, you know, discharging the firearm underwater with the bullet having to pass through the water. It's going to take away the kinetic energy and the velocity, but I would imagine at two or 3 feet, it would still be quite useful.
Well, you get use ballistic tips are better than hollow points too.
Yeah. Are they
to be more
cool?
Probably better just to have a good knife when you spear gun or something like that.
All right. Well, I tell you, you know, one of the things that caught me a while ago when we're talking about emergency preparation, and it is so valuable, and the Joplin incident just shows you. And like you said, there's a good chance a lot of those homes were totally wiped out.
Right.
But the information that you've picked up, you can't lose.
Right.
And but emergency preparation to save your life or your family's, and that's exactly what Matt does.
Absolutely.
Every day. I mean, we don't think about it like that, but what he trains you for is exactly that, emergency preparation to protect yourself.
Absolutely.
If people have been trained, they're going to respond in a much more calm, reasonable manner, too.
Yeah, that's really true. And what you were saying earlier just about training and just the fundamental, it's almost like doing fire drills when you were a kid in school. And, you know, the fire bell would ring and everybody would go out and they'd line up next to the merry-go-round or the swings. And, you know, each class was in a row in their place and they trained that. And I actually try to use that analogy when we do, like, personal protection inside the home when we're setting up safe room strategies and particulars of defensive operations and theory within your own home, fortifying your home and taking exit strategies and contingency plans and so forth for different things that may happen. And you go through and you practice those things so that it almost is like a fire drill, so that you develop muscle memory, you develop rudimentary types of responses to those types of different situations that could possibly happen. And then if they do happen, you don't go into shock. And there's pretty much five different responses, emotional and psychological responses to different types of, you know, emergency situations or threatening situations. You have shock, you have fight, you have flight, you know, so you have these different things that can happen. And the main thing is, you know, submission, other different things. You don't want to stay in that place where when there's a threat or an emergency that you become frozen and you can't respond because of lack of training. So,
well, you know, talking about what we were talking with disasters and possibly the loss of law enforcement in different situations.
Yeah,
the
that's
training
really important.
That you can get from Sovereign Arms is, you know, you think about it every day, it's important, but in a situation like that when there's no law enforcement to fall back on, when it's you protecting your family and nobody else,
invaluable.
And you might have a bunch of lowlifes wanting to take advantage of all your preparedness that you've done.
Sure.
And they will.
You know, think about that and think about the fact that you're proficient in defense and firearms, and that makes a big difference when you're, you know, trying to protect your family, you know, let alone everyday street stuff. So it really comes into play in a situation like we've been talking about.
Now, Richard is an avid gun owner, too, and has always enjoyed firearms. You have, you know, you have some preparation laid forth in this. Now, you talked about having having guns, not, you know, of not a big variety of calibers, so that you could have ammunition that could be either cross-utilized or at least you're not, you know, just spread out to where you're not going to, unless you're going to hit somebody over the head with it, if you don't have the ammo, it's not going to do you a lot of good.
You know, a lot of people that are into guns tend to have, they have an assortment of a lot of calibers. Like, think about high-powered rifles. You know, the ammunition for those is extremely expensive, and you know, really most people might have one or two boxes for each caliber of gun they may have.
Probably about right.
Well, that's not going to last real long, you know, where if you try to consolidate, like go with like an AR-10 assault weapon, which is a .308 caliber, there's ammunition is readily available. They make that in bolt-action rifles that are highly accurate. They make it in survival rifles that are single shot, that are very portable. So that, you know, that's one route. So you can specialize if you want to reload or stockpile ammunition. You know, you're concentrating on maybe one caliber instead of having to split your funds and get two or three different kinds of calibers. And the same goes with handguns. You know, they're less expensive to buy ammunition for, but you know, if you want to stick with the 45, you probably don't want a 45, a 40, a 9, a 380.
I do concur with what you said, and I think that probably the top three calibers on rifle you're going to be looking at, the .223 caliber, the 7.62x39, which is the AK-47 round, and the .308, or the 7.62x51 NATO. It's the same round. And, you know, there's a lot of good calibers, a lot of different calibers out there, but I would also qualify those remarks by saying that there are defensive calibers for big game shooting or a civil unrest type of situation or something like that, where you may have to actually shoot longer distances and be very effective. And those are good calibers to have. Those three calibers, the .223, the 7.62x39, and the .308 caliber would probably be readily found in most of the state and still be accessible. A lot of people would have that. Your top three calibers in the handguns are going to be 9.40 and 45, probably 9mm being more readily available than the 40, and 9 and 45, I think, both substantial amounts. So I think those would be good things to have. The other thing, you can look at the perspective of just long-term hunting or trying to be efficient. And a really good survival 22, like what you said, one of those little single shot that they float and do all those different types of things. And you could literally buy 5,000 rounds of 22 ammunition for a couple hundred dollars.
$150 I got some last week.
There you go.
Wow, really?
And depending on, you know, what quality you get, but that could be stored for a long time. And, and I mean, those are the types of things that could be used to shoot rabbits, snakes, other small animals, squirrels, and so forth. Providing that they would be around for long enough in an emergency situation, but you could conserve and eat and live off of hunting with a real small caliber like the .22, and then save the defensive ammo for a situation where if you needed to protect
your
more family, absolutely,
right.
Or a very large animal, you know, that'd be a little different.
Now,
so.
Would you suggest, and do you carry any high profile air guns of any sort?
Air guns are. They're fantastic.
Very good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Top the game.
I grew up shooting with a Benjamin, you know, .22 air rifle. They're fantastic. They have other different. They've come a long way in the progression.
Yeah, small game. And
absolutely,
so
and as long as, and it's cheap, and you can control the velocities of it. So yes, I think that you know, having 10 or 20,000 pellets around would be a very cheap investment, and to have an air gun and maybe a rebuild kit for that air gun, so that if something did happen.
Is that something you carry?
Yes,
also
as absolutely,
well?
Yes.
Well, you're the guy I'm going to see then, because
right.
I've been looking for one of those, and I need to be prodded.
You said you're going to buy some.
Oh, well, you're going to kill me. Right. Sherry, this is not really happening. This is just for prop
illusion. So as far as all of that goes, just overall, best self-defense pistol that you can think of off just the top of your head. I know there's a lot of factors that come in. Just something if you could throw it out there.
Sure, and we talked about that at dinner, and I think out of the box, accuracy and reliability, it's really hard to beat the Glock for what it is. And its simplicity, for the money, and I will qualify it by saying that, for the money, it's very simple to break down, very easy to clean, very few moving parts. And accuracy and reliability, it's been proven. Glock's been around for 30 years. As I said, I do executive protection, bodyguarding stuff, and I carry two firearms every day. I trust my life to that gun. Now, are there better guns? Yes. But for the money, and everybody's hurting economically. We're going through a lot of stuff in the United States. That gun is just a fantastic gun. Very few moving parts, very easy to field strip in an emergency. Barrels sometimes are interchangeable on different calibers. Magazines are interchangeable and so forth. So great gun as far as just a defensive pistol. I think that's a great choice. Other good choices out there, Springfield XDs, XDMs, kind of in that same price range and very good firearms. A little not as easy to take apart in an emergency, though. And I like that about the Glock, that it's just very fast to field strip.
You know, what about reloading? Is it practical? Is it?
Well, it can be. We actually don't allow people to shoot reloads on a range because reloading, I think you had mentioned earlier about reloading, it is kind of an art in that there's a little science to it and some finesse to it, and it takes time to become proficient at it. And people that shoot thousands and thousands of rounds, definitely worth learning to do it and doing it correctly. But more often than not, you will have people that experiment with it, and they can actually cause conditions, what's called a squib load, where there's a low pressure to the actual charge that goes off, and the bullet actually doesn't leave the barrel. And then a successive follow-through shot can actually split the barrel, can be dangerous to the operator of the firearm, can shoot projectiles into their eyes, fragments of metal. On long guns, it can actually peel the barrel open like a banana.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing, but get really good professional teaching. You know, get somebody to really show you what to do. It's not something you want to experiment with, and it's also probably not a good thing to be using on a public range, just for the safety of everybody. And the main problem that we have with reloaded ammunition is not necessarily the ammunition in itself not functioning properly, but the operator's response when the ammunition doesn't function or operate properly, and people will look at the gun, look down the barrel of the gun.
Three Stooges. Oh, yeah.
And so it can become very dangerous.
It really happens.
Yeah, it really happens. I've stood behind 2,500 people in the past 2.5 years, and
you've seen
people look down the barrel.
2,000 people look down the barrel.
What do you do in that instance?
Grab the gun out of their hand.
Yes.
And give them a firm talking to.
Familiarity comes with that, too, to know right away that something wasn't right when you pulled the trigger.
Yeah, I mean, how many times can that be repeated?
And we actually did, when we were talking earlier in the dinner there, and that's one of the things that I really pride myself on our class, and one of the things why I think our class is the best concealed carry class out there, because I pour into just that concealed carry class a wealth of information and how to deal with ammunition failures. That is something that is one of the most realistic things that can happen in a firefight. And if you can't put the gun back into battery when the gun doesn't fire, you're dead. And you can't protect your family, your loved ones. And so we teach those types of things in just our lowest level class. And that exercise, which is called an immediate action drill, becomes the pinnacle and central exercise of all defensive handgun training with a semi-automatic, and you will see that in 100 different variations in any kind of tactical or defensive training that you take and that you escalate the stress levels and the level of the training as you progress and become more proficient. You'll see that exercise throughout all defensive handgun training. It's and
we
give
norms.
That yes, and we give that just in the first CCW class, and then it becomes a central component of all the advanced training that we do.
Again, of course, we talked about that muscle memory, also just repetition and,
yes.
And knowing what to do. And we've got a question from Twitter that we're going to let the gang address right after this break. Something taken.
Fight Ribbon Clothing Company. Clothing and fight gear on a mission. Fight Ribbon is the original MMA clothing company built from the ground up for fighters and fans. Clothing with a purpose. The new face of cancer awareness. Fight Ribbon Clothing Company. Because what you wear matters. Visit FightRibbon.com.
As this evening, we're joined by Matt Gummersall, Richard Blowers, Greg Harned, Dean Whiteman, and myself, Kevin Harned, and we are talking emergency preparedness, and we are in the self-defense area of this conversation. Along with you could catch some of the other episodes. Make sure that you catch the episode on the food, water, equipment that you can carry. All this stuff is all just tools that you can use. In a case of any type of emergency, it could be a man-made situation, a natural disaster, a terrorist, which would fall in the man-made situation, I guess. All those things can be applied in here. There's one comment here that came in on Twitter. That would be, one dad's life says, I love him. I wish I could afford more. Need a great place to shoot. Wife is a crazy shot. So that is one other area. If you live in the St. Louis area, that's
sure.
One other thing that you can help the folks with, and you have your own shooting range.
Absolutely. We have an indoor pistol range only. It is 40 feet long, 4 lanes, heated and air-conditioned, very well ventilated, and we have the cheapest rates in town. It's $10 for a half hour. Anything over a half hour is $15. If we have all 4 lanes going, we do limit people to a half hour. But if there's not anybody out there, you could literally shoot all day for $15.
Wow.
Yeah, so we also offer private instruction. I do that Monday through Friday. It's $50 an hour for private instructions. Your best deal is to come and, like, buy a gun and a class together. We always give $75 off of a class if you purchase a gun and a class together. We have group rates on Missouri Concealed Carry. 5 or more is $50 off per person. So if you have a group of 5 or more, you can get $100 per person. And then, of course, we have all the extensive additional training as well. But we'd love to have you come out. If you come out and tell anybody in the store that you heard us on the show, we'll give you your first half hour for free. That'd be fine.
I'll be there this weekend.
Wow. Well, yeah. I'm going to tell you, folks something. I stopped by a big box store this evening that sells pistols, and the fellows were fairly friendly and knowledgeable. But I promise you, if you stop by and want to know information about that particular gun, that particular weapon, or whatever you want to call them, that Matt here can answer it in depth.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not knocking the gentleman at the other store. Neither can they so quickly offer you instructions and opportunity. They had a sale with $75 off a pistol. Well, guess what? I'm going to get $75 off a pistol retail price to apply toward mine. CCW.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So what a bargain.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And that's the thing that we try to make the difference on is everybody has their niche. You know, we're not trying to be a Bass Pro, or we're not trying
absolutely.
To be, you know, a certain other
Cabela's.
And there's other gun stores around that have is kind of specialize in hunting and different things. I really lean towards the personal protection. I mean, I feel like it's a calling. This is something I got into about 4 years ago. And I really think it even goes back to the Bible. There were mighty men of valor that were felt in their heart. They were called by God to protect kings and dignitaries and people and teach people to protect cities and communities. And as we were talking earlier, I was trying to explain, you know, to me, I think it's a community thing. I think it's a thing where you get a community of people that become the most proficient, savvy, articulate, safe gun handling people in a community that have the ability to take life, but that they respect and value life so much that that's the last thing they want to do. And the the willingness, if you will, to use lethal force or deadly force is certainly much different than the desire to. And so
right.
being able to is different than I can't wait to.
Right.
And that's the kind of people that I want to train, and that's the kind of community that I want to see be developed.
I have a question as far as emergency preparation goes, and this was right down your lane. We haven't touched on shotguns.
Sure.
Now we're talking, if you, a lot of people, I mean, this class that you teach is just amazing, and but it has a lot of physical things. I know you can train somebody who's also handicapped very well.
Absolutely.
But if you're an older person or don't have the ability to seek this training, a shotgun, would you recommend for a home protection?
Strictly inside the home, a shotgun is a very effective choice if that is going to be a dedicated defensive firearm strictly for the home. Outside the home, you know, if you own
right.
property and acreage, certainly yes. You can't really conceal
no,
a shotgun.
No, it's not for concealed carry, but we're talking about on the emergency
preparation. Shotgun's a great choice. The one thing, this is kind of how I look at it. Everybody needs a good long gun like a rifle, whether it's a bolt action or a semi-automatic, something that can really reach out distances. And then everybody needs a good shotgun. Everybody needs a good sidearm. If you have those three things, you kind of got it covered. And the shotgun has a very specific purpose, and so does the rifle, and so does the handgun. And so there will be different uses for those particular weapons, you know, for different times or different events that might be going on. But the shotgun inside the home can be very effective. You do have to be strategic with the type of ammunition that you're using. You don't want it to be so overpowering that it's shooting through walls and potentially hurting your loved ones in the house.
Good
summary. Right. And we cover all that. So.
Okay, and one more question just to tag on real quick. And this goes back to Joplin again. And this goes to the training, but I've got my firearms to protect and a tornado comes through. Is there, what can we do to help keep our firearms, I know the answer short, but from being dispersed into the community through the tornado and then you have nothing?
Sure.
If you survive, I'm saying.
Right, sure. That's a great question, and gun safety is absolutely something that is high on our priority list. You know, if you got kids, get a safe. We have actually exclusive rights to the safety bullet, which just came out. We're in four counties in Missouri. We have a brand new product, and you'll see that online coming out in our store. But as far as the dispersion of the firearms into the community after some type of tornado or disaster where there's physical damage to the home, and there could be looting or other different things that are coming on. The development of a safe room and actually hardening that safe room in your home is part of the planning that we do. And we can fabricate safe rooms for people. We can do concrete. We can do everything as extensive as providing other air systems. We can bulletproof your walls. I mean, we
really?
Can do all
wow.
kinds of stuff. We actually can do that. And just you know, buying a really good quality safe that has a burn rating of 1,200 degrees or more for more than 3 hours is really good. And actually, instead of just standing the safe in there after you buy it from Sovereign Arms,
bolt it
with anchor bolts to the concrete.
Right.
And get a foundation where you're actually bolting it down, and that will procure your firearms and keep them safe in the home and probably keep them from being looted.
I would imagine a three-hour rating would be a rather expensive safe, though.
It could be. I mean, it could be upwards of $1,500. But when you're talking about
saving lives and making sure. Plus, it's the price of one handgun in some instances.
It could be. Certainly a long gun or a rifle.
Right.
So.
You know, one of the things, and Greg had mentioned shotguns, what gauge would you recommend? You know, whenever you're talking about having enough power
but
not too much.
Sure. Actually, if it was going to be dedicated in the house gun, a 20-gauge shotgun can be very, very effective. And we have a lot of women that will try to steer in that direction that couldn't otherwise handle the recoil of a 12-gauge shotgun. And they do make different types of buckshot, which they call low recoil ammunition, mm-hmm. that actually helps a lot in the dispersion of the discharging of the firearm when you're using the 12-gauge. But a 20-gauge for an elderly person, somebody with arthritis mm-hmm. maybe, or somebody that's a woman that is very light or petite, would definitely be very effective in stopping an intruder. And again, a lot of it has variables to do with the the type of shot that you're using, the heaviness of the shot. But inside the home, and especially with kids or other family members that could be in other rooms, you don't want the over-penetration of the double and triple-odd buck in, that will just go right through drywall.
Oh, absolutely.
So number four, number six bird shot, and a 20-gauge shotgun inside the home could be really effective.
The average home is just two half-inch pieces of drywall and studs.
That's right.
Exactly.
I mean, we've got a comment, actually a question from Facebook. This is coming from Below 42. And what's the story on the Beretta PX4 compact? Need something to conceal and want to spend about $5 bills.
Gotcha.
Does that sound like he's in the range?
Yeah, we actually have that in our store. It's a double-action, single-action gun that has the safety decocker that's integrated with the safety of the gun. So you can fire the gun from single action, you can fire it from double action. One thing that's really neat about that particular gun is that it does have a little pinky extension on one of the magazines that's pretty neat. It's a patented deal that Beretta did. One thing I don't like about that gun, just ergonomically, when I do all this defensive training, there's a lot of controls on the top of the gun. And so when you start doing failure to fire drills, slide lock reload drills, and the way we teach you to use gross motor skills and an overhand grip and reloading that gun, all those controls can kind of be cumbersome and get in the way and actually kind of hit your fingers and your the palm of your hand when you're doing that. Still a really nice gun. It has a chunky little grip on it. So ergonomics means a lot. When people come in to buy guns, we usually go through a five-step process of identifying what they want, kind of getting a price range, getting a caliber, and all these different things. And then one of the last things we ask you is, how does it feel in your hand? And generally when people are looking at a firearm, they'll be picking up one or two, and they keep coming back to one or two, and they'll say, ooh, I like that, or that feels like an extension of my hand, or, man, that really feels good. And if you like the way it feels, you'll want to train with it, you'll want to carry it, you'll have it, especially women clients. If they don't like it or it's too big, too heavy, too cumbersome, they leave it in the drawer, and then when they need it, they don't have it. So Beretta PX4 Storm in the compact, great gun. We have them in stock. They're in that kind of that 549 range. Now, we have an exclusive lifetime warranty that if you buy anything from us that has the Davidson's warranty and you have an issue, we actually get you a brand-new gun, versus having to send it back to the manufacturer to repair or replace. And that warranty program costs us about $25 to $30 on pistols, about $50 to $75 on rifles. But we have the best warranty in Missouri. So if our prices seem,
you can't
a little,
beat that.
Yeah, they seem a little higher, always ask us about the Davidson's warranty, because that's a hard cost to us that never leaves that gun. And so for the rest of your life with that gun, you would have that. But, yeah, come in and check that out and, you know, feel the gun, see if you like it. They make that in a subcompact. They make it in a 4-inch service model. Accurate gun, nice gun. But you have to like that double-action, single-action trigger pull and the first squeezing of the trigger on from double-action hammer down with that gun is a real long, heavy trigger pull. Then it goes into single action, and each successive shot is nice and light and crisp.
Well, again, where can he find your store?
Our store is located at the corner of 141 and Highway 21, just in between Arnold and Fenton, Missouri. We're on the southeast corner, and you can go to www.sovereignarms.com, or you can give us a call at 636-287-8821.
And also, I know that I certainly appreciate, and I know everybody else does, the fact that you came in, enjoyed dinner with you tonight. And also, appreciated all the information that you shared.
Absolutely.
Did you have anything as far as protecting your property or anything else that you would like to share?
Well, sure. And I think just as far as disaster preparedness, having a plan is extremely important, whether we're doing bodyguarding, church security, teaching people personal protection inside the home or outside the home. Visualization is a great tool, and going over contingency plans and strategies and what will we do if this happens. And one of the things that we set up in PPITH class, personal protection in the home class, is what we call developing a threshold stimulus, which is setting up scenarios that are basically if-then scenarios. If this would happen, then I would do this. Then if that would happen, then I would do this. If this happens, then I'm going to do this. And they always move in a force continuum from a less lethal and a progression.
Almost like a flow chart.
Towards more lethal, exactly. And so implementing that, compartmentalizing for your life, for your business, taking, you know, home, work, gym, you know, exercise, whatever I'm doing, and kind of compartmentalizing those aspects of your life, including what would happen if there was a tornado, what would happen if there was, you know, a civil unrest and a bomb went off, if there was a terrorist threat, if, you know, the living in a big city, if you know, another tower got hit, or living in Chicago, something got blown up, or you know, D.C. or any of these big cities, what would we do if this happened? Then I'm going to do this. Right. And so implementing those strategies with food, with water, with firearms, and having those firearms secured properly, and maybe having different types of firearms, as I said, a long gun, a sidearm, and a shotgun, and maybe strategically putting those things in certain places, having an adequate amount of ammunition, and then getting the proper training to make sure that you know how to implement and use those firearms, each one in specific instances. And again, this is not a 10-hour course in Missouri CCW. We can take you as far as you want to go in any kind of tactical training, handgun, shotgun, long gun, but just come and get the training and do it the right way and be prepared so that if the unthinkable would happen, you're not going to be the one that's left not knowing what to do.
You know, I looked at some of your courses, and they were 2 14-hour days.
Yes, sir.
A lot of training in that. Yeah. You covered a lot of the stuff. And they could probably find that information from your website.
It's all
too,
online.
Right?
And we have videos online, excerpts of the different types of training from the simple classes all the way through the advanced classes.
This doesn't really pertain to disaster, but what if I wanted to pursue, now that I'm so keyed up about all this information, pursue a bodyguard training?
Sure.
You do?
Absolutely. We have a 5-day bodyguarding course that I teach. I actually just took second place out of 55 shooters internationally at Executive Service International. There was 55 guys there from around the world, and took second place in that course. So we do teach a 5-day bodyguarding course. I also teach some bodyguarding theory and strategy and some types of defensive driving. There's like a 2-day course with that. And so, yes, we do teach that. I also teach a 1-day hostage taker shooting course, which is probably the most advanced and elite course that I teach. It's a 4-lane run drill where you're actually moving with the firearm, transitioning from a primary firearm to a secondary firearm, where you're doing a hostage shot in between the transition from one gun to another. It has to be very precision shooting. And that's something that you can see online on our website as well. I demonstrate that.
I do know one thing. I felt darn safe eating dinner with you.
Yeah.
The waitress didn't at first.
Yeah, that's true.
She didn't, but you know what? You handled that extremely professional. And just like after the interaction with you, she was fine.
Yeah, that was great. That was
and
great.
One more time, what if they come in your shop, mention Truth Matters.
Come into the store and tell us. We'll give you your first half hour on the range for free.
Can't beat that.
No, you can't.
So.
Well, I'm going to mention it.
All right. Then you can buy something.
He'll be there.
He's going to be going. This is going to cost me a lot of money, Kevin. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
That's right.
Well, Matt, I know, again, looking forward to having you back. And we're going to talk about a lot of the other topics that we talked about in that show, because it'll just be specifically surrounding a lot of the interesting things that you do.
Thank you.
And a lot of the different things that you offer. And I'd love to get more in-depth in those things. Richard, thanks for coming in tonight.
Oh, anytime.
Anything to close with?
Time to think about getting education and getting familiar with defense and guns isn't when something happens.
That's
it's
right.
Before it happens. So now's the time to do it.
Greg?
I'm still in awe, Matt. I want to be a bodyguard now.
He's going to follow you home.
I'm going to follow him around and be a stalker.
There we go.
I got a feeling if he took a second, no, I wouldn't last very long stalking. So.
Greg's going to get him a red rider.
He's going to throw me out with a BB gun, I can tell that.
50,000 pellets. Yeah.
But I've appreciated it. Thank you for your time.
Oh, absolutely.
And Richard's always awesome.
Dino?
Oh, that's me, too. No, I think we should all get in on that course and take the thing together.
Which you do offer group rates.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely.
So make sure that you sign up as a group. And what do you want, like a half dozen usually?
Yeah, on the CCW class, it's a minimum of 5 people. And if 5 people will sign up and pay at the same time, normal price is $150, we take $50 off per
person.
That's
a good
deal.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
You know, and
wow.
One other comment I'd like to make, and you reference your concealed carry class kind of as a low tier, you know, and I understand it is with what you offer.
It is.
But
You're
talking about a 10-hour course.
Right.
And this is 10 hours, and a lot of people, I assume, are not putting that kind of time or that kind of training.
No, and just course. Real quick, we had talked about that earlier. I had a gentleman, a young guy came in the store about a week ago and said he had taken his course somewhere else and was looking at buying a firearm. Then he says, well, I want to shoot the gun before I actually buy it. And I said, wait a minute, didn't you just say you took your concealed carry course somewhere? And he had actually taken his course somewhere. I told him, don't tell me where it is. But he wasn't required to shoot by his instructor, and they did not fulfill the Missouri requirement, which actually is breaking the law. And after about 15 minutes of asking the gentleman, you know, well, did you learn how to do a slide lock reload or a tactical reload or defensive sight alignment or a failure to fire drill where you have to put the gun back into battery immediately? And he answered no to all these questions. He almost was crying. And he said, can I come back and take your course? And I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. Yes, of course you can come take my course.
Right.
And secondly,
that time you want him to.
I'll give you the money that you wasted on this other instructor towards one of our advanced courses.
Wow. Oh, good for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Great.
And, you know, that's the difference, guys, is we care. We're looking at building lifelong relationships with our clients. I want to take people from, you know, maybe knowing nothing to becoming to where they could shoot IDPA or be a bodyguard or whatever they want to right. do, that they become professional, articulate, responsible, that they can defend life. They know that they can do it, but the last thing that they want to do is ever have to be in that position.
Again, yeah. Matt Gummersall, Sovereign Arms, St. Louis area. Get by and see him. If not, you also sell online and out of the area. So
Nationwide, yes.
Check out the website, Sovereign Arms. It's .com.
www.sovereignarms.com.
Richard, Greg, Dino, thank you for coming in. Matt, thanks. I look forward to having you on again, all of you guys.